And thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's March 2023, and this is episode 331, which is a conversation about the self-help teacher, Brianna Wiest. Today's guest is Ann Kennedy. She has an MDiv, and she is the author of the book, Nailed It, 365 Readings for Angry or Worn-Out People, and blogs about current events and theological trends at standfirminfaith.org. Ann has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. Her article is called A Mountain Made Low, A Look at Brianna Wiest. Our subscribers can read her article for free at our website, equip.org, because they have access to all of our online exclusives. If you would like to receive access for our online exclusive, please also go to equip.org. You can subscribe for $33.50. Ann, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I mentioned, Anne has written an article about the work of a writer named Brianna Wiest. So some of our listeners may not have heard of Brianna Wiest. And who is she and what are some of the noted things that she's written?
I hadn't heard of her either. She was somebody that I guess in the mainstream of self-help books that I've read, I hadn't come across her, but she's kind of a very elusive person that it's hard to find out any sort of personal information about her. She's very different from, say, Rachel Hollis, who has filled up, you know, the internet with stuff about her life. But Brianna Wiest is known in sort of financial circles, I think, like the Fortune 500 lists. She writes for the Thought Catalog. That's the place where she's most known. And she has written two really well-known books, 101 Essays That Will Change the Way You Think and The Mountain Is You are the two most well-known. There's a shorter book called The Truth About Everything. She's pretty young. She's only about 30 years old. And she's interesting because I found there's very little biographical information about her, but in the truth about everything, she does tell briefly about how she left behind her Catholic faith. Well, her family's Catholic faith. And that's just, she had kind of a rare condition where she, neurological condition where she would be asleep, but she would also be awake. I can't remember the name of it and I can't describe it either, but it was really stressful and terrifying. And so then she began to sort of search for other kinds of spirituality and to make sense of that experience. And as a result of that, became a self-help person who resonates deeply with she has a core of people who really love her writing. It says she's written some poetry and I didn't come across any of that. I don't know the style of her writing, the way it looks on the page is sort of interesting. She does long, long lists of in the 101 ways to change your thinking. You know, there's like 101 ways, things to think about instead of, your problems or lists like that. So she's kind of an interesting, she goes off of the beaten track in terms of the format of writing.
So I first came across her writing in terms of, you know, just kind of culturally conscious about it, like who enjoys her writing, by hearing about just her core audience from somebody who said that really she's so big among teenage girls and college girls, so 20-something women, and you did mention that she's younger. They are really looking to her as kind of maybe the non-mom set. You know, some of the people we've covered, like Rachel Hollis, are kind of more of the moms. The moms look to her, but these are younger girls. And so what do you think about her particular message or just her books and her ideas really resonates maybe with that younger crowd of women, teenagers and 20-somethings that aren't married.
Right. That's a good point. She does have a very young feel. And I say this without any attempt to criticize at all, but okay, I'm going to betray my age and also my, maybe my education. But there's a lot of sort of technical writing things that are strange in her writing. A lot of words that are used strangely and not the way that my generation would use them. That's kind of a side note. I've been watching some videos of very, very much younger women talking about their relationships. And for me, it feels like a breakdown of the English language, but must be that some kind of new form of English is emerging. And she definitely speaks that language. She talks in a really breezy, quite a fresh way, but also a little bit difficult if you're wanting English to be very correctly written. That's not a big thing. So that's one part of it. She's very fresh and kind of bright feeling. And the other thing I found interesting, I mean, as a now connoisseur, I guess, of self-help literature, just for research purposes, really, I found that she really had a little bit more depth than the mom version of Jen Hatmaker or Rachel Hollis. She really goes into the question of suffering in some more interesting ways. She takes it straight on. She's not afraid of it. She promises that you'll suffer and that it's not bad. And it's not just an endless prosperity, you do you kind of message. There's more depth, more spiritual depth. I use the word spiritual not as a Christian term, but just, you know, in the sort of spiritual, not religious world of which she very much is a part. But she, I'd say, is more interesting, more even Christian adjacent than, say, Rachel Hollis. It's not just pure prosperity, go get $1 million, enact your dreams. It's more that the struggle of the self and who you emerge will be not just about consuming goods, but about your position in the your place in the cosmos. So it's kind of in many ways dark, but also more realistic. And I'm sure that that's why she's so popular and with younger women who, you know, the last 2 years have been really rough for that demographic. They lost their high school and their college years. I have a daughter that age, and there's a lack of hope, I think. And in her writing, you do see glimmers of how you would put your life together and become something a little bit, but with a darker struggle of the self, the shadow side, the sort of Jungian mythos that's really popular amongst young men as well.
You were talking about how younger people just have kind of had this mental health crisis maybe because of the last few years. And I don't know if any researchers have put their finger on what's causing it. But I just know recently I heard from a friend who lives in a different part of the country that at their high school there was a suicide of a young girl, upperclassman. And then my son goes to a university where there have been several suicides this year. It's been well publicized in the media. And also one of those was a young girl too, so a freshman girl. So these kinds of issues where people are wanting to work on themselves or are having a crisis of self seems to have come to the fore perhaps over the last few years because people had more time for introspection or felt more alone or something like that because of the maybe the pandemic or how the pandemic changed relationships. So what in her, now that you're a connoisseur of self-help kind of writing and social media accounts and those kinds of things, what in her writing, besides the stuff that you've mentioned, would be attractive to someone and maybe go beyond what you were talking about, the typical that was pre-pandemic, very popular, that Rachel Hollis kind of health and wealth, like follow me and you can, you know, manifest your dreams.
She definitely pulls together all the different elements of common self-help. So she assumes manifesting as kind of a spiritual practice. She doesn't talk about it too much, but it appears it's a thing that you would, of course, be doing. It's sort of an interesting idea. But she also, you know, the idea that you would do work on yourself, you'd go to therapy, you would try to become a healthy, well-balanced person. She has, she assumes a lot of the world of self-help, that if you, you know, you need to sort of put your desires on your subconscious and let them kind of hang out there. And then that'll help you move forward and find the things that you want. But it's mixed in with more common sense, gritty, you're going to have to get up and take a walk by the power of your own will. So it was interesting. I did find the question of self-sabotage, which the Mountain of Is You is about why and how people sabotage themselves. They make goals. They buy, you know, girl, wash your face. They wash their face, but then they, you know, they still hate their lives. So she goes deeper into the questions of why you would do that, the grief and the stuff. And she works it out in the usual kind of psychological way that I've seen in a lot of other places. But she, again, there's more depth and it feels probably more compassionate, more realistic. Like it's not just rah, rah, girl, girl, go, go. She acknowledges that people's lives are really difficult and it's not fair and they're not just going to get everything they want, and that there might be things that are desirable and good that aren't measurable in terms of money. So yeah, she just has more depth and she's more interesting. I think she's probably a more interesting writer, even though a lot of it, especially if you read, you should not read 101 Ways to Change Your Thinking in like a week. It's not meant to be read that way. And that's how I read it. You're supposed to take it in small bites. And so, you know, I think I don't, for instance, if you are a really solid Christian, I think you could probably read that and find some useful advice even, but it does circle through. It assumes the whole world that's sort of grown up, the post-Christian self-helpism is for many people a new religious structure that provides for them everything that they need to become whole and well. And she's another important piece of that overall picture.
If you haven't already done so, we would be very grateful for your partnership with us just by using some of your time. It really helps us out if you rate or review us on Apple Podcasts. That's kind of the major site where this is done for podcasts. And again, as I mentioned last episode, our last rating was at the beginning of September 2022. So we'd like to see a few more of those just because it helps us out with the algorithm online and more people can find our content, because I know that other Christians would be encouraged by the content that we put out. So we're grateful to you for considering to do that and just taking a moment to tell people why you listen, or just give us a few stars. I mean, that's really fast and easy and wouldn't take any writing involved in that. But you can also continue to support us by subscribing to the Christian Research Journal, because this online content, especially in the cultural apologetics area, is what you get when you subscribe, the access to these exclusive articles. And you can do that at equip.org, or you can go to any landing page at the Postmodern Realities tab on our website and give us a tip at the link there. So thank you for all the ways that you partner with us, and we appreciate you and your support of the Christian Research Journal and the Postmodern Realities podcast.
I do want to tell our listeners, because we've mentioned some
past content that we've had that Anne has covered just in our conversation as we are talking about Brianna Wiest. One is manifesting. And if you don't know what that is, I would go back and listen to an in-depth podcast episode on that, which was episode 286. And then we've talked a little bit about Rachel Hollis, who's kind of a self-proclaimed Christian self-help type of advice giver who's gone through a lot in her life, actually. And we talked about her on episode 136, and she is probably best known for a book she wrote called Girl, Wash Your Face. But I want to quote from Brianna Wiest's book, The Mountain Is You. She says this, quote, "Many people say that you have to love yourself first before you can love others. But really, if you learn to love others, you will learn to love yourself." And, you know, for a young teenage Christian girl, that sounds almost biblical. I mean, is that biblical adjacent advice that she's giving?
Yeah, I was really shocked by that line when that whole section, she's really advocating like good old fashioned reality. And that's that the more that you focus on yourself, the worse it's going to get and the more unhappy you're going to be. And you can see that the drive, the work on yourself, do work on yourself is so exhausting. I'm seeing people on TikTok coming unglued because they've done all the work in it and they're still really sad. And so there's a lot of advice like that, yes, it's if you want to find out what's good in the world, you should take your eyes off yourself and try to love someone else. Try to focus on someone else, give yourself to someone else in a common grace kind of way. That's one reason why people have always known that something like motherhood is a saving grace, because your natural instinct is for your child and it pulls you out of yourself. And in many ways, that's kind of like being, it's not exactly the same, but it's like being saved. You know, you're pulled away from the problem, which is you. So in The Mountain Is You, she kind of articulates that not fully, not in a full, of course, not in a Christian way, but you do stand in the way of yourself all the time. And so that's one reason why Jesus wants you to look away from yourself to him. But even looking towards other people to care for them is definitely better than looking to yourself. So, yeah, it's a surprising moment. I never thought I would get to the day when I'd read in the self-help book that you should love others before you love yourself. But, you know, if young women really take that to heart and try to apply it, that's a good step. There's hope maybe for a whole generation.
So I'd like to ask you a little bit about her prevailing assumptions about, you know, spirituality and psychology and the self, you know, personhood, because I think that a lot of times, especially younger girls and guys, just younger Christians, if they haven't really been grounded in their faith, they can hear something that's adjacent to Christianity and think that it's fine. But I think more and more, because our culture is so fixated on self and identity and truth for the self based on one's own, you know, ideas and convictions, not based on anything outside oneself, that there is, like you said, so many people trying to better themselves and coming to the end of it. But some Christians might not even understand what the Bible has to say about the self. So can you tell us what she teaches and how that is in contrast to what the Bible teaches about the self?
Her understanding of the self is very much in line with what I'm running into in every corner of online spaces and, you know, in person and online. And that's that there is something deep down inside of you that if you find it and you bring it out into the light and you work on it, you will have found something good and beautiful. And then that will at least lead to fulfillment. You'll have found your place in the world, and actually the world will be a better place. The cosmos will be made better and more beautiful and enhanced if you discover your true self and enact it, or, you know, fulfill it or bring it into being. She also has a sort of, I first encountered this with Rachel Hollis, but this idea that there's potential out there. And if you don't meet your potential, you're somehow, that's a source of suffering. You're somehow going to not be able to be happy forever, or happy now. And not living into your potential is really kind of an evil. It's almost sinful not to do that. And she articulates that same idea about potential and the self, for sure. It's tempered. It definitely is tempered by this concern for other people and the knowledge that just relentlessly pursuing your inner beauty doesn't work. Like, she acknowledges that. The metaphor of the mountain is interesting because there's also something in you that's stopping you from getting to your true self. So it's this sort of interesting, terrible picture of struggle, really. But she gives good reasons why you should do that, you know, because you want to be somebody, you want the world, don't you want the world to be a better place? It's interesting. It's like the logical implications of self-love are showing cracks, and she's trying to fill the cracks in with, you know, common sense a little bit, psychology and other kinds of helpful things that we have in our culture. It's interesting, of course, that she just has taken away the only way to sort of deal with who you are, and that's to admit that you're there. The more you dig down, the less good you're going to find. There's nothing, sure, you're made in the image of God, but it's a shattered image, and spending more time looking at it isn't going to make you happy. You really do need to look to Christ and be healed of your sin through forgiveness and the mercy of the cross. There's a really nice way out of your problems, and that's to give them to Christ. And I felt, you know, really much more compassion for the audience of Brianna Weiss as I was reading her than I do for, you know, those more, you know, Rachel Hollis or others who really do seem to be saying, well, you'll be happy if you get rich quick. This Weist is not saying that. She knows that life is really difficult and tough, and it's precarious. And what are you going to do about it? It's kind of her existential question. And so she doesn't come out with a self that would be healed by Christ by any imagination. It's still an immense amount of work. I mean, the thinking about the image of the mountain, you can't scale a mountain. It's the old business of, you know, if you walk up the mountain once a day and do that for the rest of your life, well, then, you know, when you die, you'll go to heaven. That kind of works righteousness craziness that should bring you to despair. That's really what she's putting in front of you. But it's heartbreaking. And I wish that she would, you know, sort of, as they say, circle back to her roots and try to hear what Christians are really saying, because I think she's thoughtful enough and she articulates suffering in such an interesting way that be interesting to hear what she might have to say about the idea, the Christian ideas, if she had really encountered them. I'd be fascinated.
I do want to quote from her book, The Mountain Is You, because you were just talking about putting in the work. And she writes, quote, "It's not whether you feel like putting in the work, but whether or not you do it regardless." And so this concept of, quote, doing the work, end quote, it's really popular with Gen Z right now. And it was kind of interesting. I saw some article in the New York Times about like dating apps. And one of the best things that you can be saying about yourself is you're trying to put in the work on yourself. And what is that ethos all about? Because I understand that, you know, she's saying their suffering life has been hard for you, but what that's not the same thing as people recognizing that they're a sinner in need of a savior. I mean, that just seems really offensive to people when they could potentially be putting in the work.
It is. I recently came across somebody on TikTok who admitted to having done the work, and she was almost in tears because she listed all the work that she was doing, and it was everything that, you know, Wiest would say she should do: journaling, manifesting, praying, going to therapy. And then she called it doing her forgiveness work. I thought that's interesting. That's an interesting way of putting it. But she looked like the end point of somebody who's really worked hard and then has come to the end of the day and discovered that there's still work to do. And that is very much what Wiest is offering. You have to do it. And the interesting twist is I think we've had a very feelings-based world that we've been encouraged. And in many ways, I think she probably would agree with this, that you look to your feelings to tell you about yourself. But there was a lot in her books about how that's very unreliable. I was really happy about all those things she said about how bad your feelings can be and how you shouldn't trust them. And this is a good indication of that. If you feel, you have to do it, even if you don't feel like it, if you wait to feel like it, you'll never do it. That's true. But what is it that you're going to do? And again, it's becoming a person who's good and uncovering a person who's good. Both of those things are impossible without God. So she's setting a task up. She's trying to help you, you know, empty the ocean of water, knock down the mountain by yourself. And you can't do that. I would really encourage people who come to the end of 101 ways to change your thinking and just decide that it's impossible and then think of something else like going to church, because there's no end to it at all. And it's all kind of nebulous, even though she goes against, you know, she says you can't trust your feelings. At the end of the day, how you feel is who you are in this kind of world. And so what if you've done all the work all day and you're really still miserable and all of your relationships are broken? Then you're in a place of despair. So I have an immense sympathy for this generation of young people who are caught in this kind of world, this kind of work, but I hope that it drives them out of it to find some other solution.
I wonder about that. Another topic that Anne has covered for us is positive affirmations, because I know that you can do those and say those all the time, but do they really contribute to the work? I mean, if you say them enough, will you feel better about yourself? And if anyone wants to listen to that conversation, it was episode 299. But what are some of her views of spirituality? I mean, does she weave some spirituality? Because like you said, she acknowledges that there's suffering. She acknowledges that you can't just focus on yourself. You have to focus on others or you won't get, you know, you won't be doing the work on yourself. So how does she view spirituality in a person's life?
Her view is very spiritual. This is not just a sort of secular self-help thing at all. She really thinks the self is a spiritual entity that is in a relationship with the universe. I thought it was so interesting in her book, 101 Ways. Actually, I can't remember. Maybe it's The Mountain is You. She never once mentions the word God. And in the other book, she uses the word God lowercase when she's talking about various idols that people have, particularly money. She names out the idol of money repeatedly and self-approval of others, but she never uses the word God as if God is a real being, a personal being who could be known at all. She does talk about the universe. And so that's an assumption that we live in a spiritual world. There are forces, and I don't know if she would say there are spirits or anything like that, but there's definitely probably energy forces, she would say, that you need to orient yourself around. You're a spiritual being. And so she talks about the self that way, but it's so interesting. I still, in that kind of discussion, there's never any mention of worship. I'm still sort of waiting for that. Like, what are you going to worship? She kind of alludes to it, but it doesn't come out overtly. And you're the center of whatever it is. Your spiritual life is the kind of the center of the universe. So she's very, very spiritual. This, I was bemused because she did use, in The Truth About Everything, she uses the Footprints poem to talk about the universe taking care of you. And she apologizes for using a, quote, Christian metaphor. But that's the kind of spiritual world that we live in. At some point when you're really down, the universe will give you what you need and you'll be carried. You need to get yourself into a place where you can be taken care of and also take care of yourself. So it's pretty vague and definitely not Christian at all, but interesting, very interesting view of spirituality.
I find it fascinating in the conversations we've had about the concept of the universe hearing you, whether you, I don't know what that is, because I guess people are saying they can't believe in God. The universe is something they can see, but I'm not sure how they think they can appeal just in general to something out there that would somehow change their lives. And I know, like we said earlier, that some young women are feeling very desperate, or they feel really badly about themselves for a variety of reasons. I mean, instead of reading The Mountain Is You and maybe being more confused, especially Christian girls, what would you recommend? Because they are feeling not understood by peers and parents and just feeling the weight of, you know, trying to navigate life in America, I guess, in the West. That's where we are.
I think psychically, not just young women, but people in the West do have an impossible task in front of them. Even Christians face this. And that's that our communal lives are so thin and shallow that we do have to articulate to the world who we are. That there's no personhood that's conferred from outside at all. It all has to come from within, and you have to find those markers and articulate them into the world yourself. I've found this very stressful personally because I grew up in another culture, and in a culture where people always want to come to America like it's going to be the best thing because you get electricity and running water, and those people don't know that if they came here, they would suffer extreme isolation. And all the things that are really most valuable to personhood would not be there for them. They are not the things that are most, the markers that are most valued to confer personhood are lacking to the vast majority of Americans, to say it in a convoluted way. And so I think even Christian, I'm not surprised that Christian women are looking to Brianna Wiest or any of the other self-help people, because we're told that you, and in some sense, we do have to make the meaning for ourselves, or we have to articulate it for ourselves, which means we have to figure it out and then be able to tell it to other people in a convincing way, convince ourselves and convince others. That's existentially awful. And I don't think it should be the case that young women should have to deal with that by themselves. I think church communities and families should get a grip on themselves and start giving meaning to each other, you know, conferring meaning and status and personhood to each other. I don't practically know how that would be done. There's just so much has eroded away that how you recover it, I'm not really sure. But the church should be the place that should say to people clearly, this is who you are. You don't have to be able to articulate it very well. You don't even have to really understand it. This, you're loved by this set of people in concrete and real ways. And your meaning is given to you by God because he made you and he died for you. That work really needs to be done. And until it is more realistically, practically, and fulsomely accomplished, young people are going to continue to be miserable and despairing. And I don't know, there's going to be such a sharp distinction between the world and the church that young people should be able to see that if they come into the church, all of this existential weight can be lessened and they can find relief, not just for their sins, but for their egos and the weight and burden of that. And I'm not, you know, we needed to start doing this yesterday, but we should start today.
But I know a lot of young people, and when I say young people, I'm probably thinking like, you know, some younger millennials, because some millennials are already 40, but there's millennials that are closer to like, you know, early 30s, and Gen Z, and even younger than Gen Z. You know, I don't know what the next generation is after Gen Z. Actually, I don't know what they're calling the really young kids, but just all of those, they just have a reticence because they're more comfortable with being online or reading a Brianna Wiest book and then following her on Instagram or TikTok. That seems more comfortable to them where they can resonate. Well, okay, Brianna's been through some things I've been through. Then just the uncomfortableness of being in real life. And I think that's what the church sometimes is saying, okay, you have to be here in real life. And that's very uncomfortable for them. I mean, how would you encourage someone, especially for younger kids, maybe they're in youth group, teenagers, where things that happen from not Christian kids are happening to them, where people are not welcoming them or maybe bullying them or something like that. I mean, it doesn't make them want to go to something at the church. I mean, how do you encourage them that that's where a place they should be when they feel so uncomfortable in the flesh versus the comfort of behind their screen?
I think, I mean, it's uncomfortable for me, but older people and older people need to make themselves available online to younger people. I've noticed that one reason our youth group right now is doing pretty well is because the Discord chat of the youth group is so robust during the week. They have important conversations online, and those bridge over and help ease the sheer embarrassment of being in person for them. So it takes a lot of time. As a parent, I'm like, I can't believe you have to be on Discord arguing about infant baptism right now. Like, it's time for us to go to bed. But I'm seeing that it bears fruit. You can't just be like, okay, we're not talking online, we're just in person. That's my inclination, and it's not okay. I have to spend time online with people. I have to text with them because they're more comfortable doing that, younger and older. I have to be on Messenger and Facebook, and I have to be available in a digital world because people are more comfortable that way. And then I, as a Christian, have to sort of drag people over the threshold of the in-person church. I do beg people to come in to church, and I go visit people in their houses, and I just try to, I'm an introvert, I hate in-person things, but it is how the body of Christ is built. The digital world is a big help right now because of that level of comfort, and I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it. And so Christians have to use it. You just got to bite the bullet and be willing to WhatsApp and Signal, find people's choice platform, and then use it if if you want to reach them for the kingdom of God and not scold them, but coax people into real life, into actual conversations in person, and not the other way around, so that the in-person isn't just supporting your online existence, but your online existence is only a support for your in-person interactions. And then really trying to drag people into worship of God in a church. It's not enough. You can't have like a long time ago, we had Franklin Graham come through here and do sort of a rally, and it was too little too late. Our community had already moved on from that kind of idea. I mean, even the Asbury thing, it was so interesting to see so many people going. They wanted to be there in person. There's a great need. You can see people's desire to be in a physical location worshiping God. But in many places, like where I live, you have to just desperately pray and then go pick them up and bring them and coax them and help them. And then they begin to see that there's something really beautiful and important to be gained by having a conversation in person.
Anne mentioned Asbury, so I don't know if all of our listeners know, but at Asbury College, University, I think it's a Christian college, there was somewhat of, I guess, an awakening, not a true revival. And people were driving thousands of miles. It started at a chapel service and it just kept going. And this was recently, was even covered in the mainstream secular news. So that's what she was referring to. And so I think sometimes, though, young people just feel so desperate, as I mentioned earlier, that just more, there's been studies, I don't know that they've had answers, but specifically girls just feel much more desperate and alone right now. And I don't know that they know the reasons, but if somebody's mom is listening to this, their parents, what would you say to encourage them? I know it's hard to encourage teenagers because they don't listen to you necessarily. They're in that season of life, but best they can, if they have a young adult or just maybe somebody out of college or something like that, how can they encourage daughters in this in a biblical way?
I think the first thing I would say is if you enjoyed Brianna Wiest, that's probably okay. You know, she's right. You should exercise for your own sake and not for the approval of others. That's sort of a biblical principle. You should, it is true that you get in your own way for a lot of things. If you've set goals and you're not meeting them and you're sleeping in, there's probably something there that you could investigate. It's not wrong to find out more about yourself, investigate who you are, who God made you to be, and your quirks, your inclinations, your desires, your sins. You do need knowledge of yourself, but where are you going to get it? So you can go a certain distance with Brianna Wiest, but she's not going to take you the whole she's not going to take you the whole way. I would say if you have somebody in your life who loves this kind of book, I would read the book and then talk about the substance of it, the actual ideas, and use it as a touchstone to talk about the gospel and Jesus, because all of the things that she mentions have really interesting biblical touchstones. Maybe not all of them, but she uses a lot of very emotional and resonant language that you could definitely, if you knew the scriptures, bring in what the Bible says about those things. The Bible has a lot to say about mountains, for example. Jesus uses the idea of a mountain over and over again, and there are different mountains in the Bible, and people, how they, it's used as a metaphor for the whole nation of Israel, for the self. And when Jesus comes into the world, when John proclaims that Jesus is coming, Isaiah says the mountains and the hills will be made low, and that's taken up in the New Testament as the person. You're brought low before Christ. You're humbled, but then he raises you up. He raises you from the dead. He gives you life. He gives you everything that you need to be happy, and he gives meaning to your suffering and your difficulties. And so I just think Christians should not be afraid to talk to the young people in their life about spiritual things. Even if those young people say they don't want that, you can plant seeds. You can, as I think it's Kokel says, you can put stones in people's shoes. I think Brianna Wiest is a great, rich source of finding, if you pull stones out of her work and put them in people's shoes and turn them a little bit so that they speak about Christ and begin to make meaning for people, give meaning, to interpret the world for people who are lost. I think that we live in a spiritual world. We can't manifest our desires. The universe does not have our back. We're not force fields. There's a lot of stuff that's completely wrong. You do need a savior because you're a sinner. But there's also a lot of material that you could take and use and turn around, turn it on its head by applying scripture to it and give people hope, your own children or, you know, the children of your friends.
Well, on a much lighter note than looking at ourselves and doing work, I have a fun rapid fire question for Anne. And we've talked about this in other podcasts, but Anne is in the Anglican tradition and her husband is a rector at an Anglican church in New York. And so they do follow the church calendar and observe Lent. So they do that in community. So a lot of evangelicals might not know. It's not that you do it on your own, but they're doing it in community. So what did you give up for Lent this year?
Well, I decided to go the worst possible way and give up carbs because I should. And I like to eat bread because it makes me feel happy. And Jesus is the bread of life. So it isn't total vanity. It's also a comfort issue for me this year. And so I am trying really hard and I have already failed twice.
Well, thanks, Anne, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
You've been listening to episode 331 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy. She has written an exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. Her online exclusive article is called A Mountain Made Low, A Look at Brianna Wiest. And our subscribers can read her article for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that. And every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.